Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said, because in general, I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed, because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex, but all they're doing is paying dues to the military-industrial complex.
At a 1991 closed-door meeting of fellow internationalists, billionaire and former CFR chairman David Rockefeller praised his media allies, but his confidence that his words would not leave the room was later broken.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and restricted their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
The military and the monetary were shielded by January and went storming into February. Brought us pot-bellied generals as luminaries. 2 weeks ago, I hadn't heard the sumbitch. Now, all of a sudden, he's legendary. They took the honor from the honorary. They took the dignity from the dignitary. They took the secrets from the secretary, but they left the bitch, an obituary. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the fucking vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel.
Rockefeller's influence also extends to the current administration. He was chairman emeritus of the CFR when Vice President Dick Cheney once served as a director, a relationship that Cheney concealed during his congressional career.
It's good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
Coming this way, if we only worked for peace, if everyone believed in peace the way they say they do, we'd have peace. The only thing wrong with peace is that you can't make no money from it. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. They've turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery. We've got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. We should not allow ourselves to be misled by talk of entering a time of peace. Peace is not the absence of war, it is the absence of the rumors of war and the threats of war and the preparation for war. Peace is not the absence of war, it is the time when we will all bring ourselves closer to each other, closer to building a structure that is unique within ourselves, because we have finally come to peace within ourselves. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning parts of the planet into a cemetery. What you gonna do? Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary.
Say, what you gonna do?
We hounded the Ayatollah religiously. Bombed Libya and killed Gaddafi's son hideously. We turned our back on our allies, the Panamanians, and saw Ali North selling guns to the Iranians. Watched Gorbachev slaughtering Lithuanians. We better warn the Amish, they may bomb the Pennsylvanians.
Which also created the Bank for International Settlement.
Historian Carol Quigley wrote in his epic book Tragedy and Hope, the Bank for International Settlements was part of a plan to, quote, create a world system of financial control in private hands able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole, to be controlled in a feudalistic fashion by the central banks of the world acting in concert by secret agreements.
Make money with a war. Say it to yourself. I believe we got the world for peace. Peace ain't gonna be free.
Nobody.
You believe in peace,
I don't go to work. Nobody. children all over the world, in Asia and Africa and South America, who need our help. When they start talking about 55 cents a day and 70 cents a day, I know a lot of folks feel as though that's not really any kind of contribution to make, but we have to give up a dollar and a half just to get in the subway nowadays. So this is a song about tomorrow and about how tomorrow can be better if we all, each one reach one, each one try to teach one. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Everyone must play a part. Everyone got to go to work. Work for peace. Spirit say work.
Good afternoon. Welcome to New World Out of Order. This episode, what will it take? What will it take, America, American citizens, we the people, to realize what is happening to us in our country? And then, what do we need to do to stop and reverse it? These two questions, they take up a minuscule amount of space on my screen, and they barely consume two breaths in order to speak. But to me, the consequence of these words stand to empower or destroy this nation. Currently, America as you know it, or as you believe it to be, is gone. And before any problem can be addressed, it must first be recognized and understood. The primary purpose of this talk is exactly that. Now, for those that have resolved within themselves that indeed there is a serious problem with the concurrent course of events within this country and the world, I applaud you and encourage you to self-reflect on what this country means to you and our future generations by understanding what it meant to past generations, including the founders of this nation. I hope this internal examination results in your desire to be ever vigilant in your quest to eradicate this continually escalating atrocity against mankind. If the result is anything less, and you don't feel compelled to assist in the sustenance of this nation, then your job has already been done for you. There's no input required. For those that are not aware of the effort to eliminate the sovereignty of this and all nations, in a quest for a single world government and economy created and controlled by a relatively small group of international banking elite, then I encourage you to listen to this talk in its entirety, and then embark upon your own quest for the truth about this matter. President John F. Kennedy talked to us about this in 1961. I'm going to read an excerpt from his speech to the American Newspaper Publishers Association. It's one of his more famous speeches, and you've probably heard this before, but I'm just not sure if you listened. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. Our way of life is under attack. Those who make themselves our enemy are advancing around the globe. No war ever posed a greater threat to our security. If you are awaiting a finding of clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear, and its presence has never been more imminent. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, and no secret is revealed. Now that was a small excerpt from that speech, but America didn't listen, and Kennedy was silenced. And so I'm disillusioned when, in my unwavering attempt to bring awareness, I'm too often confronted with the reply, there can't be a conspiracy large enough to control America. Someone would have said something by now. They did. Now, I'll quote a few of them here. So listen and realize that we've been warned for over 100 years. Listen, I won't be brief. Realize that whatever you're doing can wait for 30 minutes. Listen, we have been warned. President Eisenhower, his farewell address, 1961. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of our defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. Congressman Larry McDonald, 1975. The Rockefellers and their allies have, for at least 50 years, been carefully following a plan to use their economic power to gain political control of first America and then the rest of the world. Do I mean conspiracy? Yes, I do. I'm convinced there is such a plot, international in scope, generations old in planning, and incredibly evil in intent. Strobe Talbot, Deputy Secretary of State under Bill Clinton, 1992. In the next century, nations as we know it will be obsolete. All states will recognize a single global authority. National sovereignty wasn't such a great idea after all. This is U.S. Senator Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, testifying at the Iran-Contra hearings in 1986. There exists a shadowy government with its own Air Force, its own Navy, its own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue its own ideas of national interest, free from all checks and balances and free from the law itself. Harper's Magazine, 1958. The most powerful clique in these CFR groups have one objective in common. They want to bring about the surrender of the sovereignty and the national independence of the U.S. They want to end national boundaries and racial and ethnic loyalties, supposedly to increase business and to ensure world peace. What they strive for would inevitably lead to dictatorship and loss of freedoms by the people. The Council on Foreign Relations was founded for the purpose of promoting disarmament and submergence of U.S. sovereignty and national independence into an all-powerful one-world government. Senator George Malone, 1957. I believe that if the people of this nation fully understood what Congress has done to them over the last 49 years, they would move on Washington. They would not wait for an election. It adds up to a preconceived plan to destroy the economic and social independence of the United States. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, 1956. The individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. The American mind simply has not come to a realization of the evil which has been introduced into our midst. It rejects even the assumption that human creatures could espouse a philosophy which must ultimately destroy all that is good and decent. Senator William Jenner, 1954. Today, the path to total dictatorship in the U.S. can be laid by strictly legal means. We have a well-organized political action group in this country determined to destroy our Constitution and establish a one-party state. It operates secretly, silently, continuously, to transform our government. This ruthless power-seeking elite is a disease of our century. This group is answerable neither to the President, the Congress, nor the courts. It is practically irremovable. Brock Chisholm, Director of UN World Health Organization, 1950s. To achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their individualism, loyalty to family traditions, national patriotism, and religious dogmas. General Douglas MacArthur. I am concerned for the security of our great nation, not so much because of any threat from without, but because of the insidious forces working within. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 1933. The real truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that a financial element in the large centers has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. Congressman Lewis McFadden, 1932. Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks. The Federal Reserve Board, a government board, has cheated the government of the United States and the people of the United States out of enough money to pay the national debt. Mr. Chairman, when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, the people of the United States did not perceive that a world system was being set up here, and that this country was to supply financial power to an international superstate, a superstate controlled by international bankers and international industrialists acting together to enslave the world for their own pleasure. Henry Ford. It is well enough that people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. Also, Henry Ford, the one aim of these financiers is world control by the creation of inextinguishable debts. New York City Mayor John Halen, 1922. The real menace of our republic is the invisible government, which like a giant octopus sprawls its slimy legs over our cities and states and nation. The little coterie of powerful international bankers virtually run the United States government for their own selfish purposes. They practically control both parties and control the majority of the newspapers and magazines in this country. They use the columns of these papers to club into submission or drive out of office public officials who refuse to do the bidding of the powerful corrupt cliques which compose the invisible government. It operates under cover of a self-created screen and seizes our executive officers, legislative bodies, schools, courts, newspapers, and every agency created for the public protection. Winston Churchill, 1922. From the days of Spartacus, Weishaupt, Karl Marx, Trotsky, Bella Kuhn, Rosa Luxemburg, and Emma Goldman, this conspiracy has been steadily growing. This conspiracy played a definite, recognizable role in the French Revolution. It has been the mainstream or the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century. And now, at last, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworld of the great cities of Europe and America have gripped the Russian people by the hair of their head and have become the undisputed masters of that enormous empire. President Woodrow Wilson, 1913. President Wilson is a co-conspirator himself. Since I entered politics, I have chiefly had men's views confided to me privately. Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce and manufacture are afraid of something. They know there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive, that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. Also, President Woodrow Wilson. A great industrial nation is controlled by its system of credit. Our system of credit is privately concentrated. The growth of the nation, therefore, and all of our activities are in the hands of a few men. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction in the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and the duress of small groups of dominant men. President Theodore Roosevelt, prior to his election, 1913. Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government, owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people. To destroy this invisible government, to befoul the unholy alliance between corrupt business and corrupt politics, is the first task of the statesmanship of the day. President Theodore Roosevelt, 1933. A financial element in the large centers has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. Vice President John C. Calhoun, 1836. A power has risen up in the government greater than the people themselves, consisting of many and various powerful interests, combined in one mass and held together by the cohesive power of the vast surplus in banks. Now, we also have been enlightened by some of the perpetrators of this conspiracy. A few of their quotes. First off, is from Colonel Edward House. It's from 1913. Colonel House was the founder of Council on Foreign Relations and a close confidant and part of the administration of Woodrow Wilson. 1913 was the year that 16th Amendment was supposedly made legal, enabling an income tax. And then 1913 was also when the Federal Reserve Act was ratified or passed and became law. Colonel Edward House. Very soon, every American will be required to register their biological property, that's you and your children, in a national system designed to keep track of the people and that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer being able to work and earn a living. They will be our property. We will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of the law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions. Americans, by unknowingly or unwittingly delivering the bills of lading, which are their birth certificates, to us, will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent, secured by their pledges. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value designed to make us a profit, and they will be none the wiser, for not one man in a million could ever figure our plans, and if by accident one or two should figure it out, we have in our arsenal plausible deniability. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debts to the registrants in the form of benefits and privileges. This will inevitably reap us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American a contributor to this fraud, which we call social insurance. Without realizing it, every American will unknowingly be our servant, however begrudgingly. The people will become helpless and without any hope for their redemption, and we will employ the high office of presidency of our dummy corporation, which is the USA, to foment this plan against America. You might want to rewind that and listen to it a couple times. Colonel Edward House is a very, very interesting person to read about and learn about, and he should be required learning for everyone, among other people. Okay, to continue, this is U.S. Senator James Paul Warburg from 1950. Now, this is the son of Paul Warburg, who was the primary author of the Federal Reserve Act. "We shall have world government, whether or not we like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent." Now, John D. Rockefeller, 1991, Bilderberg meeting. "We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected the promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. The supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries." Now, this is also from Rockefeller, from his autobiography, Memoirs, page 405. "For more than a century, ideological extremists at either end of the political spectrum have seized upon well-publicized incidences such as my encounter with Castro to attack the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interest of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalist and conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. If that is the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it." You might want to re-listen to that one again as well. Next, Zbigniew Brzezinski. He's a former director of National Security Council. He's the founder of Trilateral Commission, and he is a member of Council on Foreign Relations. "The technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen and maintain up-to-date complete files containing even the most personal information about the citizen. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities." Now, this is just a small subset of the public warnings that have been presented to the American people over the last 100 years. There's many, many more that you can easily access on the internet, and I encourage you to do so. Now, unfortunately, we are opposed by two enemies. the first being the extremely intelligent conspirators. They ever persisted in their quest, unimaginably thorough in their planning, and diabolically sinister in their intent for world government. And the second being the extremely ignorant citizen, ever persisted in their refusal to accept the fact that they are victims of a present-day Pol Pot or a Joseph Stalin or Adolf Hitler. And I've become more of a believer in the old saying that those who choose to ignore history are destined to repeat it. But I've learned that when whittled down to its essence, the basic concept, the prime motivator is the same now as it was with Stalin, Caesar, Hitler, others. The primary areas of society required to control a population are education, media, economy, and religion. The complete and total control of information that is allowed to disseminate from these areas to the people results in a population of unwitting, unknowing slaves. In America, they currently control our education system. They currently control our economy. And they have a stranglehold on religion. And they are feverishly trying to get the upper hand once again on the media. Now, this is where we the people still realize a glimmer of hope, with primarily the advantages brought to us by the internet and technology. Now, for with this, we are able to pull back the curtain and to allow the whole population to view, you know, what the majority were never intended to see. Now, that curtain's been pulled back, and, you know, this talk and this podcast and this website is part of that, which provides this unobstructed view. But the hardest part is to get America, to get the population, the people, to look at what people like myself are revealing. Now, there's no mandates that from me that each and all of you must believe what they see. This is solely up to you. And in fact, that's another part of the recognizing the problem. Now, see, it's important that each person in this country reaffirm to themselves that they are an intelligent human being with an inherent ability for the use of common sense. Commit to yourself that you will no longer allow others to think for you, to develop your truth. Now, this includes me. My hope and my intent is to intrigue your patriotism, to intrigue your intellect, to the point that you will commit the short amount of time that's required to research this to the point where you can evaluate whether there is any merit in what I say. The amount of time to reach that point is short. Now, the amount of time required to get a somewhat clear view of the big picture, now it's more substantial. So what will it take for America, we the people, to recognize and understand the true nature of the controlling factors within this country? It takes you, and it takes me, and it takes our friends and our families, and it takes our co-workers and our neighbors. It takes all of us. It takes we the people. What to do once you recognize and understand the reality of this monstrous conspiracy? Well, there's no definitive answer for that, but there's many options. I'll follow up later with my suggestions. But in the meantime, read. Empower yourself with knowledge and encourage others to do the same. Now, my website is nwo3.com. That's nwo3.com. And I encourage you to go there. Read the articles that I've posted, the videos, listen to the other podcast. I believe this is my 21st podcast. And use that for a source of information. And by all means, don't use it as your sole source of information. But please, and give me feedback. You know, you know, essentially most people are actually intimidated about speaking out or inquiring publicly about this subject matter for fear of being ridiculed and labeled a conspiracy theorist. Well, I want to encourage you to not be intimidated by that. But there again, it's still a leap. So bottom line is, email me, call me. I mean, I've got my phone number out there. It's actually a Google voice number, but, call me. You know, I'm not somebody that's in your normal, everyday circle of friends. And, so, you know, there's no fear. There's no threat of being, you know, called a conspiracy theorist or whatever. Yeah, if you feel like talking about this, you know, shoot me an email, call me, join me on the podcast. I encourage anybody to come in and let's just talk about this kind of stuff. People need to get comfortable, you know, with that, with talking to other people about this. So that's probably a little bit more than I wanted to say on the close here. But listen, guys, I appreciate you joining me again. And like I say, next time we will, present you my suggestions for what can be done. You know, once you realize that that there is a problem and the severity of the problem, the criticality of correcting the problem in a very, very timely fashion, then you're going to want to know, what can I do? And there's many things that we can do. I have some suggestions, and I'll tell you the things that I'm doing, and you're listening to one of the things that I'm doing. We have to unite. You've got to understand. You have to get educated. You have to join as a community. All right, guys. Thank you very much for joining me, and I will catch you next time.